I have walked out on a pool deck and been like, excuse me. And it didn't go over very well, so I didn't do that again.
No.
Excuse me.
Welcome to Fit to Be Radio. Slip on your minimal sneakers, notch your headphones into your ears, tuck your smartphone into your pocket, and take us along for a walk while we talk. Or just grab a cup of your favorite drink and get on the floor and stretch a bit while we bring you all things fitness, core, and diastasis recti related.
You guys ready?
Yes. Yep.
All right.
Born ready.
Born ready. I love that.
I love your first one, though, when you're like, I wish I could just say all those things. I know. That is so bad.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Fit to Be Radio. My name is Chris Banky. I'm the host, and I'm also the co-founder of Fit to Be Studio. I'm here today with Beth Learn. She's the CEO and founder of Fit to Be Studio, and we have a very cool guest I'm excited to talk to. His name is Dr. Timothy Hyatt. I've known Dr. Hyatt for a number of years. He played a key role in helping my wife and I through a very sensitive issue for her, the issue of depression. And one of the things that Beth and I have talked about while talking about podcasts and what we should do is, what are the people that come to Fit to Be and that are on our forum and that come and are members of our site, what are the things they're talking about? What are the things they're asking about? And a topic that comes up a lot more than I would have thought, but comes up a lot more than you might think, is the topic of depression. And Dr. Hyatt is an expert in that area. He's a naturopathic doctor. And so we thought it'd be awesome to have him on as a guest and kind of walk us through what he's seeing in his practice, what people should think about, what they should expect if they're facing this issue, or maybe they don't know they're facing this issue and maybe they've got some symptoms. So I'm excited to jump right into that. Tim, where are you coming from today? Location-wise.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in Dundee, Oregon.
Dundee, Oregon.
Yep. Wine country by the Portland area.
And Beth, you're at home in Battleground like usual.
Yep. It's cloudy and rainy here.
Yes. I'm in Bend, Oregon. So we're kind of spanning the Northwest right now. And if you're listening to this podcast, you need to go over to our website and go to the podcast page and watch this video, because there is a Rambo 3 poster that you should check out in Tim's background. That is fantastic. What is with the Rambo 3 poster, Tim?
My son got it. It was a gift from my father-in-law. He's an antique collector. And so he found that in an antique shop one time, short while back in Wisconsin. So he sent it out here.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a nice, beautiful thing.
He's got some good muscles on display there.
Yeah. Movie posters of Stallone are always in good taste, I think.
And that's a good example of depression right there.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So you've been you're a naturopath doctor.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, what's a naturopath doctor? What does that mean?
A naturopathic physician is, basically, a naturopathic physician is trained to do a number of things. It depends on the state you're practicing in. I can anywhere from in the state of Oregon, for example, I can do anything from minor surgery to spinal manipulation. Naturopaths can practice homeopathy, herbal.
Right.
We have a full formulary. So it's pretty varied. It's like a general practitioner with an emphasis on natural medicine and holistic medicine or functional medicine. Yeah.
Okay. So, so one of the things that you have spent a lot of time studying and have specialized in, and what you helped specifically my family with, is the issue of depression. Mm-hmm. So I know you've done a lot of research in that area. And I have not, but one of the things that has shocked me is how common depression is. And Beth, we see this all the time on our forum. Not all the time, I don't want to overstate it, but it's a common topic that comes up. I mean, you're seeing this, right, in our support forum.
Right. Well, just the other day, I was listening to something on NPR, National Public Radio, about how it's 10 to 15% of women will experience postpartum depression. And I feel like that's actually higher, because I happen to know that suicide is like the number two killer of women, heart disease being the number one.
Wow.
So the ways that women die in this phase of life are directly linked to that.
Wow.
So this is a serious issue, and a lot of women deal with it. I think it's because we don't live in tribal communities that are supportive anymore. We live very isolated, and women are sent home with partners who go back to work quickly, and women go back to work quickly, or maybe they don't go back to work, and so now they're not connected to their friends anymore.
Right.
And they're expected to do all the things by themselves with very little help and support, and that is hard. Mm-hmm. While taking care of a newborn,
right.
While
right.
toddlers, while teenagers, and that's just a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tim, what do you see in practice? Like, what are you seeing? Is it as common as it seems like when you're reading these statistics and things?
Yeah, it really is, and I think part of why it seems like the numbers are increasing. And they certainly are. The number of people who are taking medication is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the diagnoses has improved, so we're getting better tools for diagnosis. So sometimes we'll see those numbers go up just because of the diagnosis. But I think there's a crisis, you know, at least in the Western world, in terms of, I think Beth mentioned that, you know, the lack of tribal living and in this communal living with families being close
right.
together and staying together. And
right.
There's so much going on there that you don't hear that much about. But when it comes down to diagnosis, you know, the tools are getting better, but the treatments, you know, there's a lot of different ways to deal with depression, but we're still pretty myopic when it comes down to treating. It's like, we'll take this. Well, what can I take? Mm-hmm. What can I do? And our mindset in this country has to get away from what can I take
right.
To fix the problem to how do we fix a cultural problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's kind of where I think things need to go, and we're going that direction, but it's taken some time.
Yeah. I know for me, I mean, I went in and I told my OBGYN, I think I need to be on something mm-hmm. because I feel like locking me and my kids in our garage and leaving the car running. This is when my son was two, and he goes, okay, yeah, you probably should be on something. You don't need to be committed. I'm telling you this, you're not going to turn me in, right? Because that's a fear too, is right. I think a lot of people are going undiagnosed because, especially moms, because they are afraid their kids are going to be taken away if they say something.
Sure.
And that is a scary,
wow.
scary thought. Yeah, and so having doctors that we can trust to talk to, doctors that can actually help us get to the root of the issue. Something that fascinates me about your approach, because we've talked about this before. I've interviewed you for a longer video blog on Fit to Be about a year and a half ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And you are willing to prescribe meds if those are needed. But you also want to get people into a natural mode, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and because there's a time and place, but the ideal is we're not on these meds forever.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not using them as a crutch, and we are addressing what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's the key. I think, Chris, you asked about it earlier. You know, as a naturopathic physician, we're trying to get to figure out what the cause is. Treat the cause is you know, if you do that, then you're eliminating the problem at the root. And that's what we're trying to do, is just treat the cause, figure out what's going on. Sometimes it requires the use of medication. Sometimes it requires that we, you know, go through a bunch of testing to figure out what's going on underneath the surface. But
right.
ultimately, we're trying to figure out what's wrong and fix it.
Right. So one of the things that I think happens, but you guys might know more actually, if that's true, is that people don't necessarily even realize that they have a depression issue. It's mm-hmm. it's kind of like they have some symptoms and they don't want to, it could be a couple different reasons. Maybe they don't want to admit that they have a depression problem, or maybe they just, it's not all clicking that they have a problem. They just have some things. How common is that? And what are the things that people should be looking for?
Yeah. What are the symptoms?
Mm-hmm. With depression? I mean, mm-hmm. Hopelessness is probably one of the biggest things. I mean, you come down to when a person is hopeless, that's when, you know, we're concerned about a potential issue with suicide. I mean, we can have it anywhere from fatigue,
right.
Lack of motivation, poor sleep, lack of appetite, you know, lack of empathy for others. There's a whole long list of things, but I think, you know, in these cases where, let's say, Beth, for instance, where you have a woman who's just had a child in this critical 3 to 6 month period where hormones are changing and
right, that fourth trimester.
Oh my gosh! I mean, it's just gone through the roof.
Yep.
And seeing people in those situations with, you know, not knowing what to do. How much of this is just I'm tired? How much right. of it is truly, you know, neurochemically they're challenged and they need some help? And I think that's mm-hmm. where we have to figure out, you know, having things like this or information that places that they can go to talk to their people, mm-hmm. get information so they can make a choice for themselves whether or not to go talk to their doctor. And I think it's always good to check in with a healthcare provider when you're feeling off.
Yeah.
I think that's the key, is at that first sign when you think things just aren't quite right.
Yeah.
Go talk to somebody.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is that the main thing is if you're feeling some of these symptoms, and you listed a bunch of things that I don't know that I would not have associated all those things with depression, mm-hmm. That they should talk to their doctor.
talk to someone. Like, yeah. I think, like, because for me, at first I didn't know I needed to talk to my doctor. I talked to the preacher's wife and I talked mm-hmm. to friends. I talked to Alice, right. Chris's wife. Mm-hmm. And she was like, Beth, this is what this sounds like. You and just getting it out to somebody who could then tell me to talk to somebody else.
Yeah.
My question is, and Chris, you may have been going this direction already, is like, how do they find a doctor like you mm-hmm. who's actually going to help them really get to the root cause of it and not just brush them off? How do they mm-hmm. find a doctor they can trust? Because I know you do really specific hormone testing mm-hmm. and that really measures their chemical well-being. And it's not the same tests that other doctors run. Can you tell us, like, okay, these are they should say, hey, do you run these tests and what tests are those? And
yeah.
What should they be looking for? What are the things they should look for to find a provider?
So in terms of a provider, okay, there's a number of facets to this. So I think sometimes there's, you know, if people are in an area where it's difficult for them to find a natural mm-hmm. healthcare provider, then I think there's a ton of really great nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, and medical doctors, DOs. So this is what it would look like for me if I was saying, hey, how do I find somebody? What do I do? Number one, find someone who approaches depression from a holistic standpoint.
Okay? Right, not just one angle, not just
not
medicine.
Just one angle. We're looking at medicine. We're looking at the psychosomatic part of it. Someone who's willing to say, okay, I don't think it's a physical issue with your brain. I think it's actually, we need to get some therapy alongside this. And I think, so the important thing would be finding someone who's willing to listen, one. Two, someone who approaches medicine from a functional, you know, there's a new term.
Functional medicine, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where medicine. I'm going. There's the term is functional medicine. So find a functional medicine provider, somebody who's able to look at your tests and your symptoms from a lot of different angles and do testing to come up with a treatment plan.
Mm-hmm.
Alternative medicine is kind of, functional medicine is kind of the new alternative medicine. And a lot mm-hmm. of people are starting to go that direction with their practice.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I always recommend people look for a functional medicine practitioner and then, you know, get some tests done. And mm-hmm. part of it is, you know, we look at hormone tests, we look at tests for gut function. You know, the gut plays a huge role in the expression of neurotransmitters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it's really massive. So organic acid testing it's been around a while, but people are really starting to use it a lot. They're looking for these things that compounds that come out in the urine that tell you a lot about how the body's functioning, mm-hmm. as far as nutritionally, and several other things. So
what about hair tests? My mother-in-law is really into hair analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the valid hair analysis. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
So what we're looking for with the hair analysis is there's a couple different things. You can do nutrient analysis. You can also do heavy metal testing through hair analysis.
Yeah.
It's something I don't do a lot of, but I am aware that it's out there. And if people want to get a test like that, I mean, you have to look and search and find out who's doing it. They can be very helpful. Sometimes, you know, if you have a problem with nutritional imbalance, those hair analysis can be pretty useful.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of other tests to do, but that would be one example. Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So tell us, so does fitness, can fitness play a role in depression? Good, bad?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. How does it tie in? I mean, I know it's a loaded question, but
yeah, there's a couple different things that I think about with this. Okay. So fitness, you know, some people, their default is to run out and exercise when they feel bad. Why? It's because they're looking for that runner's high. Okay. Mm-hmm. Their neurotransmitters, basically respond to what the body does. And so if you go out and run or lift weights or exercise vigorously, you're going to get that runner's high. You're going to get a release of your own endogenous opiates. So instead of taking the drugs, you go out and you run, you get that runner's high, that opiate release, and that feels really good. Dopamine will reinforce that. So, you know, dopamine plays a very, very big role in depression. And this is something that we've always looked at the serotonin model of depression and said, oh, it's all serotonin. It's not. Dopamine plays a very, very big role. Now, getting back to your original question about exercise, some people exercise to ward off depression. Some people need to exercise because they need more oxygen to their brain. So we're in a situation where moderation really, you know, plays that fine line, and you have to be using exercise in moderation. If you feel like you're a chronic exerciser, then there are problems there. Your metabolized cortisol will shoot through the roof if you exercise too much and you don't get recovery. What happens when cortisol goes too high? We end up with all kinds of problems. It's a long conversation, but I can answer some specific questions around that.
Oh, well, I can just sum up part of that. You know, cortisol is a stress hormone, and it's actually going to make you pack on the pounds and keep you from sleeping and keep your body from being in balance because it's telling your body to be ready for anything at any time.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And metabolized cortisol, when it goes up, depression goes up as well. So
So what you're saying is there's really, it's not that we need to encourage people to go out and, forgive the expression, but go balls to the wall all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It is exercising to feel good, not exercising to feel worse.
Mm-hmm. And recovery is as important as the exercise itself.
Oh, I love that you said that.
I cannot tell you how many people, because I look at hormone tests 2 days a week, all day long. This is what I do for part of my living. And we see these elevated metabolized cortisols with people who chronically exercise and don't get enough recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also something, not to sidetrack too much, but there's something called heart rate variability. I'm sure, Beth, you've had some exposure to that.
Mm-hmm.
When the variability of the heart is great, that's really healthy. When the variability of the heart rate is pretty fixed and very low, it's not healthy. So we have these things that we can use to check to see, you know, what kind of state the body is in. And, and cortisol would be one. Heart rate variability is another. There's a whole bunch of others. But
So at the high level, though, what I think I hear you saying is, if I'm someone that's struggling with some of these symptoms, I shouldn't not exercise, but I should be careful in my fitness activities to have good recovery, to not overdo it, to not overtrain. And you know, the nice thing is that the Fit to Be website is perfect for that. A lot of well-rounded nicely balanced fitness routines.
Yeah. And we get quite a few threads from people who have adrenal fatigue and Hashimoto's and other imbalances that cause a lot of fatigue and low energy. And I didn't even know that. But word got out that, hey, you look, it's this more gentle and you still get a good workout, but it's not stressful. Because I think there's something about doing workouts where the instructor is screaming at you and pushing you past your limits and yelling at you. Yeah. And I don't think that our primal body understands the difference between being pushed to the limit by choice or being pushed to the limit because a bear is chasing us.
Yep.
So
yeah, you're putting them in a fight or flight mode.
Right. And so when the workout stresses you, it's that, okay, yeah, you worked your muscles. And I see all these chiseled bodies, they are stressed and they're not sleeping and they're falling apart. Yeah. And yeah, they look great in a swimsuit, but that's the only thing that's looking great on all the tests.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's absolutely true. I've seen some test results from elite athletes, and you would not believe some of the way that these look. It's just
wow. You think they're very healthy, but inside it's a ticking time bomb. Sounds like.
Would you say, Dr. Hyatt, that really it all kind of boils down to how we feed and tend our bodies?
It's everything. It's absolutely everything. It's our mental attitude towards others. It's our mental attitude towards ourselves and our outlook in life. Yeah. The self-care aspect is really what I'm trying to do as a practitioner is to teach people how to care for themselves.
And you're not talking about pedicures.
Well, that may come into play, but it's really about, people learning to listen to their body and respecting what their body is telling them.
Right.
I think we can get, people get all crazy with this, but the bottom line is if you don't listen to your body and pay attention to how your body feels after you eat, how does your body feel after you sleep or don't sleep? Mm-hmm. How does your body feel after, exercise and activities that you're doing? Are the things you're doing making you better or are they making you worse?
Right.
Overall. And so I think it's just learning, helping people learn how to deal with and understand what's going on with their body and check in with their body rather than disassociate and,
Yeah. And this isn't to almost victim blame, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And remember, I was on Zoloft, so I feel like I can speak to this.
We've all been there.
Right? It's because there are times too when life happens and a lot of life happens at once and that will throw you off chemically and you didn't have any say in the matter. You were not getting any sleep and you were moving across the country and then somebody died and then a kid got sick and in your body, that is a lot of stressors. There's no time to check in. But once you have time to check in and once you realize something is off and wrong and you're not recovering, you're not getting back on your feet, you're feeling hopeless, you're losing empathy for others, like your kids, and when they're crying, you're like, suck it up, buttercup. Mm-hmm. That's time.
Yep. For sure.
You need to talk to somebody. And and then it does go back to that nourishing the gut, nourishing the body, getting enough rest. And that is hard. That actually does take work, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does. It really does. And again, we always put everybody else before ourselves. And that's part of the problem is as a caregiver or nurturer, everybody's first and you're last. It really, there's got to be some balance there. Because if you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of others. And so trying to find time to take time out for yourself, go exercise, do things you can, sleep in, support your young mother. But trying to do other things things other than sleep, exercise and schedule in, time for yourself. So,
yeah.
Now that brings me to another question that I had, which is, that Beth kind of describes the scenario of things unraveling and that could be a time, that could be a really great time, an appropriate time where someone might need to be on a more, severe SSRI type drug like Zoloft, something like that.
Can you define what SSRI is just for the people like me that don't know abbreviations?
Yeah. Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor is okay. The class of drugs, antidepressant drugs, that is most often used these days. Started being used in the 80s, and then kind of we're still seeing a rise in increase in number of prescriptions. Mm. I think 14% of the people in the United States are on an antidepressant.
Wow. Right
now. 14%.
And it's climbing. Yeah. It's a lot of people.
So what, at least what we experienced, what my wife and I experienced with her, was a doctor put her on, actually it was also Zoloft. Mm-hmm. And I think it was appropriate. Like, it really helped her a lot.
Yep.
But then 6 months, a year went by, and she approached the doctor and said, "How long do I take this?" And the response was, "Forever." And she's like, "I don't want to take it forever." And she responds, "Well, okay, you can stop taking it. Let's just stop taking it. Just take a little bit less next week, a little bit less the week after." And it was scary when she tried to do that. There was no support from the doctor. Maybe he's just a crappy doctor. I don't know. She tried that again 2 years later with a different doctor when we moved back to the Northwest from the Midwest. And same result. So it wasn't until after working with you, Tim, that she was actually able to come off that drug. But I feel like she's pretty lucky. I feel like a lot of people get stuck on this forever. Can you talk about that? Can you talk about it? Like, is that good, bad? What are alternatives?
Mm-hmm. The drugs were really meant to be used for 14 weeks or less when they were originally.
Okay. If you're watching the video, you just saw my jaw drop because I mean, for me, they told me like, oh, it could be 6 months. It could be 6 years. And just when you stop feeling, when you feel like you just stop feeling completely and everything is numb, that's when you probably should start weaning. That was the doctor's advice.
Wow.
Yeah. And that usually happens 6 weeks in when the drug actually kicks in and is working. And then, you know, those drugs typically work that way. They take the edges off, take the top, the highs and the lows. I mean,
right.
Life is like this.
Yeah,
it's
and it did.
Like a sine wave. But with those drugs, you're going to take the peaks out. And then you end up being just feeling like very numb.
Yeah. So, which kept me alive and it kept my kids alive.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, they're great for the immediate time. But the problem is over time, it's...
I was a robot.
Detrimental because, well, you are. And we know that those drugs... Here's the interesting thing. People prescribe them short-term to get the patient out of a funk.
Right.
The problem is, over the long term, some people actually end up with lower serotonin because of the drug. The drug actually reduces the body's ability to recycle serotonin in a number of people. It also reduces dopamine. And what happens when dopamine falls is we get depression.
Yeah.
So
that's
we're
not
in a situation
good cycle.
Where... They don't really even understand fully how those meds work and the long-reaching effects that they have. So, you know, there are a percentage of patients that need them and need to be on them in order to feel normal, and that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. The problem, there's no long-term fix for this. It's just, here's the drug. We can talk about sex hormone balance and looking at estrogen, progesterone levels, and testosterone levels in both men and women.
Right.
You know, when we see low testosterone, we see low estrogen, we're going to have depression. I mean, so...
And there are foods and there are things you can do, lots of things actually, to boost those or to balance those, right?
Yeah.
I've been learning about that in a course I'm taking through Burrell Education about, you know, it's a little bit of integrative, functional women's medicine health that's kind of boiled down for practitioners like myself. Mm-hmm. Are there some general tips you could give our listeners? Like, obviously they need to see a doctor if they suspect that they have this or they're dealing with it, they need to see a doctor. But what, if their doctor says, yeah, I'll see you in 2 weeks, I'm booked until then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are three things at home in their life that they could right away eat or do or whatever?
Yeah, I'd say that the first thing is if they're not exercising, get outside. Get outside, not in the house. Get outside and get some oxygen. Get some blood flowing to your brain. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's all it takes. It's just, if people are in a funk and they're not exercising and they're depressed, get outside and get some breathing in and see how that makes you feel. That would be one quick thing. Two, cover your bases with diet and with fluid intake. And it's real right. simple, but you know, when you stop drinking enough fluid, especially water, or you drink too much caffeine as a diuretic and you're really depleting your body's water stores.
I'm like looking for my water right now. Where is it? It's over there.
Right? Yeah. Yep. You need to have enough water in order to feel good. And depression is a very short-term, you get real quick feedback if you're dehydrated. So that would be mm-hmm. one thing to just simple. As far as foods go, you know, limiting simple carbohydrate intake and getting those blood glucose swings, it's huge. The effect of, mm-hmm. You know, we tend to feel depression. It's not a clinical diagnosis, but we tend to feel depression if we're hypoglycemic. We get this big insulin spike after eating sugars and, you know, simple flour, pastas, breads, cookies, candy, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
We get the blood sugar spike and then we get a drop right. and then we feel depressed. So that's right. just eliminating right. some of those simple carbohydrates can make a huge difference.
Right. Now, and I know you, Alice, Chris's wife, and I too, at one point, we both used the supplement that you produced called mm-hmm. EQ. Mm-hmm. And you put that together as a way to get a bunch of these compounds into a pill. And it's not a fix-all pill, but it has ingredients in it that have been shown to help naturally fight these big swings and these big imbalances. Yeah. Can you just tell us a little bit, tell our listeners, we know,
yeah.
that's why we're having you on here.
Sure.
But can you tell our listeners a little bit about like what's in that and yeah. And how it works?
Yeah. So EQ is a formula that contains amino acids and vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
And it essentially what it does is it helps balance your brain chemistry. So we're talking about serotonin and dopamine and norepinephrine in the brain. Getting that balance back tends to bring things right as far as, you know, your internal world and your psyche and your moods. Tends to stabilize yeah. the moods. And so what we're doing is we're providing the nutrients that your body needs to make those neurotransmitters so that you can feel good. And that's mm-hmm. simply what it is. And we'll prescribe that sometimes when we have patients who they kind of need to get their mojo back, so to speak. They're just right. feeling really off.
The mojo.
Right.
Get
yes.
the mojo back. To feel like they can function on a normal level. Mm-hmm. You know, we have patients who are really fatigued, who have low motivation. They tend to have that kind of depressed feeling, but they may not call it depression.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They're a little bit more anxious than usual, and they're just feeling off. But, you know, we'll usually put patients on that for 2 or 3 months and, you know, kind of help them get that good feeling back.
Mm-hmm. And it does help.
Yeah. Yeah,
I am not a pill popper. I really am not. I mean, I grew up with a mom that shoved vitamins down my throat. I love you, Mom. If you're listening, I love you. But you know, there's a lot of vitamins on our table every morning when I got up. I mean, and when I say a lot, I mean like a handful. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I kind of tend to be like, prove it, prove it. But I saw how this helped Alice mm-hmm. and got a hold of a bottle myself when I was going through a rough patch. And I can tell you, it is not psychosomatic what I experienced because I know the blood sugar thing. I have the blood sugar thing.
Yep.
We joke about being hangry in my family all the time. Mm-hmm. Chris knows how I get. And I didn't change my diet, but I did take that dosage and could feel like the jitters. There was the jitters, that heightened sense of I want to claw people's eyes out that I would get, you know, every morning before coffee, not there.
Yeah.
Which made me crave coffee less. I would drink, you know, it's good stuff. And I don't know what the disconnect is for a lot of people when it comes to seeing food as medicine. And I know that like you're bound by some things you can't necessarily say, oh, this is, you know, but cause it's like as in the weightlifting world, we take supplements, we take the creatine,
we take
the whey protein and we believe that that's going to build our muscles in the weightlifting world. But for whatever reason, there's this disconnect with seeing how what we put in our mouths, just like that, can create more muscle, or it can also create more bone. It can also rebuild brain. It can also rebuild connective tissue. There's you are what you eat. I didn't say that right. You are what you eat.
Right.
I firmly believe that. And our bodies can handle a lot. We can eat a lot of crap and still get up and walk the next day. It is amazing how much junk we can put in our bodies and still function fairly well. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, we're surrounded by it these days. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, making sure that you're covering the bases nutritionally means everything. There's just, for instance, there's the lab that I work at has a test that checks for B6 and B12 deficiency. We're actually measuring organic acids, and if the organic acids are high, you'll have a B6 or B12 deficiency. You can do the direct test, or you can do the organic acid test. But the bottom line is, if you're low in B12 and B6, geez, I mean, half the things in your body, the metabolic processes don't work.
Yeah.
B12 and B6 are so important.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You have zinc, you have these nutrients that if they're lacking, you cannot feel normal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So addressing nutrient deficiencies is another just powerful way to change the course of depression.
Mm-hmm. So, and that is a huge thing for women, for young moms and older moms. I mean, I'm 39. Mm-hmm. Right. And I've got clients that are in 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s.
Sure.
But when we're not sleeping and we're nursing and we're bottle feeding and taking care of the kids and making sure they get fed, and I still struggle with this. It will be 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm like, all I had was coffee.
Yep. Right.
And I fed my kids. I made sure that they had their well-rounded, nutrition-packed, protein-packed breakfast before I sent them to school. But did I put anything in my mouth before I started working today? No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you touched on something that is overlooked a lot. And I know it's important because Dr. Hyatt is constantly telling me about this. And that is sleep and how important sleep is to this issue. And for everyone,
for cell regeneration, you need to sleep.
For everyone in our culture, it's hard.
Yeah.
But for the new moms, man.
Oh, it's not happening.
So what do you say about sleep and how important it is, Tim? Let me just hear
it. I say I'm probably remiss for not mentioning it earlier. Look, if you're not sleeping, forget it. Game over. You have to sleep. Sleep deprivation. And I'm not talking about, weeks on end without sleeping. I'm talking about, hours a night, or an hour a night less over a period of a week or two, and you're going to really start feeling it, and your body's really going to hate you for it. So getting that an adequate amount of sleep, for most adults around 8 hours,
it's a lot.
It's you cannot function. You can't heal. I look at test results with people who have elevated cortisol at night. And you can tell on paper, they're not sleeping. You can just look at it and go, your patient's not sleeping, are they? Nope. It's so important. And then what we're seeing now is a lot of chronically low melatonin levels.
Right.
And why would that be? So melatonin happens to be right downstream from serotonin. So if you don't make serotonin, you're not making melatonin.
Okay.
It's so important that we have adequate melatonin levels at night. Part of that comes from sleep hygiene, making sure that your blue screen time, your screen time with television.
Sleep hygiene.
Phone.
Wait, say that again. Sleep hygiene.
Yeah.
Ooh, sleep hygiene. That's
I like that.
Cleaning up your sleep habits.
Yeah. Mm. It's cleaning up your sleep habits. And that's a whole nother topic. Maybe we do a podcast on that one. I think this is
that's a good phrase.
So important that people get proper sleep hygiene habits, sleep habits, things that are going to help you go to sleep at night. We've all but lost that in our modern society. And I think if we want to feel better, you talk about rates of depression going up. That's probably one of the big causes there.
I had to get really guarded about my sleep last year because I was dealing with some neck issues and wasn't sleeping very much. So when I could sleep, I was like guarding it ferociously, and I would set myself up because I had to sleep a certain way, and it's all taken care of now. But that it actually has really benefited me.
Yeah.
And I have since been learning about this concept that you just called sleep hygiene. Yeah. It's like, you know, we just kind of expect to go to bed and fall asleep, and that's not necessarily true. So right. We definitely need to do a podcast on this.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Oh my goodness.
Sleep is so mm-hmm. important.
Yeah. Oh man.
So it sounds like, if I was just to sum this up, it sounds like depression is really common. It is not so obvious if you haven't studied this some. A lot of those symptoms that you kind of listed off are things, at least for me, and maybe it's just me, but at least for me, there are things that I wouldn't have associated with depression. So there's a lot of different symptoms that could be tied into it. It's common. If you feel like you've got some of these things, you're not a weirdo. There's not something crazy wrong with you.
You're not broken forever. You're not broken forever. You are fixable. We can address this.
Yeah. Right. And you owe it to yourself to address it. You owe it to yourself to get to a doctor and talk to them about what's going on and get some of the tests, get some hormone tests, get some of these tests to find out what's going on with your body. Mm-hmm. It sounds like, you know, some of the stuff that we kind of know, but I love the way that you guys talked about it, both of you. It's important to pay attention to what you're eating. It's not a stupid expression, you are what you eat. It's really true.
Yeah.
That's the fuel you're putting in. Hydration. I never would have thought about how important hydration can be. Oh, I'm feeling really down. Well, you need to drink some water. Well,
yeah. That's
a very inexpensive, easy fix. And that you should try that first.
I have literally started telling my kids when they're in the middle of a fight, go drink some water. Go drink some water right now. Because it calms things down. And I don't even know why I started doing that. But now I feel validated.
Yeah. No, you are.
That's awesome.
It's the mother's intuition.
Yes, right.
Maybe. Go drink some water right now.
And drink the whole glass before you're allowed to say another thing. I think that's a fantastic parenting tip. Yeah, I love that.
It's really good.
So get the right nourishment, get the hydration, talk to a doctor. There's supplements out there like EQ that can help, you know, feed the brain what it needs so it can do its job. If you're on a harsher antidepressant medication, don't beat yourself up. Find a functional medicine doctor and talk to them about it.
And exercise.
They can help you. And get out and do some exercise.
Yep, even walking.
Walking is super good for you. So yes. Did I miss, Beth, Tim, did I miss anything on the summary of the things?
I'm looking at Tim.
No, I don't think so. I think the bottom line is approach whatever. Number one, if you're clinically depressed and you really feel like you've had suicidal thoughts, you have hopelessness and those kind of things, make sure that you go talk to someone, get in and get some help. Number one, don't try to self-diagnose and then go take pills and do things. Number two, depression takes a lot of forms. It can come from a lot of places. You know, if you're looking at, there's something called dysthymia, which is just a minor depression. That's what we're talking about here. Major depression is a different classification, usually requires medication at the onset to help kind of get people through that process.
Right.
But if you're suffering from dysthymia or minor depression and you don't know what it is, go get help from a practitioner or you know, somebody who's qualified to do this. So
Yeah,
I love that.
This is good stuff.
Well, it's been super good having you on. I appreciate it a lot. I love this.
My pleasure.
The sleep. Wait, what did you call it again? Sleep.
Sleep hygiene.
Sleep hygiene. That is so good. I feel like my sleep hygiene is not as good as it should be. So I'm going
to we'll have to have a talk about that.
And then we'll have a talk about that. And we'll have another podcast. And it's awesome. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's it for today.
All right.
Good stuff.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Tim.
Have a good one. Take care. Bye.
Good golly, Miss Molly, if that didn't give you something to chew on, I don't know what will. Thanks for listening. I really hope you join our community over at fittobe.com, where you can gain access to all our exercise videos and fitness e-courses. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe to Fit to Be Radio, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Fit to Be, on Instagram at Fit to Be Studio, and on Facebook via Fit to Be Tummy Safe Fitness. See you soon!